Sitting on the north bank of the River Thames, the narrow alleyways, smoky coffee houses, chaotic trading floors, and crowded offices of the City of London have, for over 300 years, collectively served as the beating heart of the world's most important trading and financial centre. In the 1990s, a new upstart arose to vie for the city's crown. This challenger came not from Singapore or Frankfurt or even the square mile's perennial rival New York, but from an area of industrial wasteland 5 miles downriver, known otherwise as Canary Wharf. Devastated by the Luftwaffe during the Blitz and finally put to death by the containerization of shipping in the 1960s, the redevelopment of Canary Wharf's decaying warehouses and polluted river basins would lead to a proliferation of towering skyscrapers and glass-covered office blocks where sailing ships once unloaded their wares. One of the most important of these buildings can be found at 8 Canada Square, better known as HSBC's global headquarters. Guarded by a pair of cast bronze lions, 8 Canada Square is one of Europe's most densely populated office blocks. Spread across its 42 floors is a gym, 3 coffee shops, a private dining area, and even a bank branch for the exclusive use of its staff. Most impressively, its lifts carry an average of 7,200 staff members to and from their desks every day. Today, this monument to the modern workplace, valued at over £1 billion, sits virtually empty. Like the rest of Canary Wharf, and indeed workplaces all over the world, its staff are working from home, driven there by COVID-19 and government-mandated lockdowns. With a light now on the horizon, thanks to the arrival and rollout of the vaccines, but the threat of COVID-19 never far away, now is the time to ask the question as to what the workplace of the future will look like, and how firms can best utilize now proven technologies to support their staff, no matter where they are logging on from. Welcome to the Future of Finance.
You're listening to the Future of Finance podcast by UK Finance, a series exploring the latest trends in financial services, how they're changing, and how firms can equip themselves to face the challenges of tomorrow.
Hello, my name is Andrew Rogan, and I'm Director of Operational Resilience here at UK Finance. Thank you for joining me for the latest of our Future of Finance podcast series, where today we will be turning our minds to the future, specifically the future of work, workplaces, and whether we even need to go into our office to do our work at all. Now, I'm very glad to be joined today by two very distinguished and knowledgeable guests. The first, Graham Hodgkin, Head of Communications and Culture at SMBC. Graham, with the anniversary of that first lockdown now behind us, if I asked you to summarise your experience of working over the last 12 months, what would you say?
Yeah, hi, Rogan, and thanks for having me with you today. I think from a personal point of view, I would say it's actually been largely positive. You know, on the downside, we've been incredibly busy, and, you know, I spend a lot of time on my own in this new kind of remote working environment. So as an extrovert, I found that quite tough and quite isolating. But, you know, I live in Sussex. I've got a nice place to work. I've got access to green space. So I definitely consider myself to be one of the lucky ones. So largely positive on the whole.
Thanks, Graham. Look, joining Graham and myself today is Helen Wilson, Director of Customer Success from Microsoft. Helen, you're a solutions provider, and you no doubt bring a very different experience of working in a COVID-19 world to myself and to Graham. If you could go back to March 2020 and offer some guidance to your past self, what would you say?
Hi, thank you, Rogan. Actually, I was just thinking about your Canary Wharf and the story you just told there, and you reminded me of when I worked in Canary Wharf in the 90s and the Jubilee line didn't even exist. And I used to drive there at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to my desk for 8 o'clock-ish. And if I think about where we are today in this pandemic, that just seems like such a ridiculous thing to do. But I'm thinking back to kind of, you know, back to March 2020. And I think 50% of my team were already working hybrid, including myself. The other 50% were predominantly on our customer sites. So we did generally go to the office to collaborate, you know, team meetings and stuff like that. But, you know, this pandemic has triggered a global remote working experiment, for want of a better word, on a scale that we've never really seen before. And I'm sure none of us would want to have taken part in this by choice. But I think there's been some really surprising upsides along the way. And if we can now leverage some of those lessons, you know, to Graham's point of those things that we've had this benefit of benefit of having in, and in hindsight, this opportunity that we can now progress forward, you know, some things around sustainability, some of the innovation that's come out, the supportive culture that's been nurtured in organisations, and where we're really making sure that nobody's left behind. And I think if I really think about looking back at the time, no one knew how long it was going to be, and I definitely would have paced myself. I was on a bit of a sprint thinking, oh, we're going to be out of this by the summer. And actually, I'm probably not a marathon runner in hindsight. So definitely pacing myself would have been some advice I would have given myself.
I think that would have been pretty good advice for a lot of people. I remember when there were rumors going around that we weren't going to be out of lockdown until Easter, and my own reaction was, what, Easter? That's 6 weeks away. That's outrageous. Little did I know we were really talking Easter 2021. So look, I think you both raised some really important points there and some really interesting ones, and particularly around the lessons learned piece. So perhaps before we look forward, it might be useful to spend a bit of time thinking about what's come before us and looking back at the last 12 months. In particular, asking ourselves how we as a sector really responded to what was an extraordinary set of circumstances, and what key lessons or conclusions we could draw from what has been an absolutely extraordinary year. And I guess what we can take with us as we move forward into the next 12 months. Graham, if I could start with yourself, the financial services sector was pretty quick to adapt to the rapid changes brought on by the pandemic. And we all switched to home working almost entirely in a very quick period of time, having to grapple with a whole range of challenges as we sought to support our employees and our customers in that experience. What were the type of challenges that you and your firm had to deal with? And look, how did you respond? And what did you think worked well and what didn't work so well?
Yeah, thanks, Rogan. And, you know, on top of lots of logistical challenges that all organisations would have faced, I'll probably split that answer into two. Around the themes of communications and culture. I think from a communications point of view, you know, we've tried very hard to really increase the cadence and the intensity of communications, particularly from the top of the organization. So really showing that leadership guidance and support, and for those communications to be very much people first and very human centric, understanding and empathizing with, you know, this difficult environment that all of our colleagues are going through, understanding there's other responsibilities outside of work in terms of caring, in terms of looking after children, you know, if you're homeschooling and so on. So I do believe that tone from the top has been very supportive and has been very obvious and visible. And then I think within all of that, Rogan, I think what we've really tried to do is not just to maintain our sound organizational culture, but also seen this as an opportunity to bring that to a fore. You know, we're an organization that is defined by its sense of purpose towards customers. We've been very busy supporting our customers through issues around liquidity and credit, and just helping to keep those businesses functioning through their own difficult times. But we're also an organization that relies on teamwork, collaboration. We have to work across silos, across different legal entities, across the group, you know, to really get those things done for our customers. And ultimately, I think we're a culture that is respectful. You know, we are nice to each other, and we've really tried to be supportive. So I think that combination of really increasing the cadence and the human nature of our communication, as well as bringing our culture to the fore, has really allowed us to respond not just well to the pandemic, but also to continue to grow the business and do very good things for our customers and our other stakeholders.
Graham, thanks for that. Look, Helen, Graham's, you know, touched on some quite core themes there, which are important and not just specific to the financial services sector, but obviously a whole range of other industries and sectors across the UK. You know, communications, culture, the role of technology in empowering people to, you know, stay connected remotely. I'm wondering, given your and Microsoft's unique position in the way that you engage with people from across the UK economy, what's your view on how we compared to other sectors and industries? You know, banking and finance, we like to think of ourselves as cutting edge in both terms of technology and good practice. Is that actually borne out by your experience?
Yeah, actually, I'm sitting here with a big grin on my face because I've got some statistics in front of me. So I think we saw, pace of migration to remote working absolutely outstrip the kind of previous pace to the adoption, demonstrating that some things like security and regulatory blockers could be overcome when we have to make rapid decisions, and especially at that exec level. But when we dug a little bit deeper, what we did see was many organizations simply look to replicate what was previously done in the office into a virtual environment. And I think this really touches on some of those cultural attributes that Graham talked about that they really, brought to the forefront. So I'll give you some stats from a recent report that we published. It said that the FSI sector traditionally did support flexible working and can expect more remote working and to become more popular. And 84% of the leaders in the sector indicated that employees were able to work remotely. And that was compared to an average of 75% across other sectors. And then 95% expected to work more hybrid in moving forward, compared to an average of 88% in some of the other sectors. So you're definitely trending higher there. And then another reason why the remote working has generally proven so successful in your sector is because, to come back to your point about you are an industry that puts more focus on that cutting edge, maintaining that overall innovativeness in terms of the products, the services, etc. So 36% of the people surveyed in the sector rated that innovativeness at their company was high compared to the average of, say, 28% across some of the other industries. And then lastly, the interesting kind of like stat was that FSI workers had relished the opportunity to dress more casually. So 75% cited this as a major perk to be working in your trackies, compared to, say, an average of 69% across some of the others who felt that way. And then, against all of that kind of backdrop, I think from an industry perspective, where I've just seen the most phenomenal transformation and continue to see this transformation has been in the NHS. We enabled 1.2 million workers onto Microsoft Teams at the height of the pandemic, and they were literally adding 10,000 users every day through those first 3 months, and had continued that pace of innovation. So, super impressive in that industry, and an industry that had quite a lot of legacy technical debt.
Yeah, Helen, some of those stats really surprised me actually, because banking and finance has traditionally been seen as quite a conservative and compliance-driven sector, really, and heavily regulated with entities who are very much alive to the legal requirements and that they're associated with that. So that's always often followed that there's been little room for spontaneity or creativity. So to find out that many of us embracing the opportunity to wear jeans and a casual t-shirts isn't a great surprise. But look, the observation there that actually banking has been seen as traditionally quite conservative in compliance, does that still hold true?
Well, I exactly. So you would traditionally think that, but I think there's this massive ambition within the sector to maintain this pace of change. And for us, long may that continue. And we're shoulder to shoulder in making that.
Graham, what are your views on the matter?
I think this is a really interesting point, actually. And I liked Helen's analogy about the NHS. Knowing a number of people that work in the NHS, they talk about the organisation being unlocked by the pandemic. If you think about the speed that the Nightingale hospitals were set up as just one example, if you'd done that in normal conditions, I think that would have been nigh on impossible, certainly to get done, within the space of a few short days, in the way that it was done. And I think that sort of approach kind of typifies how we reflect back on it, within SMBC. Had you said that next week we're going to have a trial where everybody's going to be asked to work from home, except a very small number of key workers that are doing critical trading type roles and need the bandwidth and the technology that supports that, that would have been impossible almost to imagine. So the fact that this was forced upon us, in many ways, I think has really helped to reflect and to realize that we can be agile, we can be responsive. And we can also be innovative and do things in different ways. I think the whole concept of innovation for my organization, we are a global wholesale corporate bank. So to your point, Rogan, you know, we are perhaps not perceived as real innovators. We're not trying to disrupt the market that we're in because we don't need to. And also we're not really being disrupted by some of the challenger firms that are coming into FS without the balance sheet, without the credit quality, without the liquidity that you know my organization has. It's very hard for that to be disrupted. So I wouldn't say that we take innovation for granted, but I think it's contextual and I think it's you know, relative to the sector that you're working in. And actually, we did quite a bit of work with our customers before the pandemic around some of the concepts of innovation. And our corporate customers typically don't want us to be innovative for the sake of innovation and to do new things for the sake of new things. What they want is reliability and to know that the products and services we offer are robust, are resilient, are trustworthy, and provide solutions to them and the various challenges they have, you know, for themselves in those organizations. But I think, you know, if you kind of look beneath that, you know, I think the banking sector has always prided itself on being creative. You know, there's always new structures, there's always new ways of financing things, there's always new markets. You know, I think we have to work harder now because of the hybrid working arrangements that we're going to go into. We've got to find different ways to innovate, different ways to come together and collaborate. But I think innovation is still at the heart of our business, but I don't think it's innovation in a way that the tech industry or you know, a startup company would kind of see it. So I think we have to be cautious around it, but I do think we also have to be contextual. And I do think we also have to say that, you know, we did a decent job in terms of responding to the crisis. I suppose it's nice for us banks to be perhaps part of the solution this time around, rather than a big part of the problem as it might have been back in 2007, 2008. And we've really had to deliver in terms of supporting our customers what is for them as much as it is for us, and perhaps more so what is for our customers has been a very, very difficult and challenging time. So I think, you know, innovation is something that we are proud of. But as I said, I don't think it's innovation in the way that other sectors might perhaps perceive it.
Graham, Helen, thanks very much for your observations there. Now, just before we move on, let me take the opportunity just to encourage you, the listener, to subscribe to UK Finance's Future of Finance podcast series. You can find it on ukfinance.org.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back. Now, Graham, I'd like to return to your observations on culture and how you think the pandemic and the switch to a remote work environment impacted your firm. What does culture look like when working from home? What changes did you and SMBC have to make in response, and what lessons do you think there are for the future?
Yeah, thanks, Rogan. And I touched on culture in an earlier answer, so let me just kind of build on some of those things. And as I said, I think for us, this has not so much been about changing culture. I think it's about maintaining culture and bringing those positive elements to the fore. And I think, you know, the context for us is really important. You know, we're a very long-standing traditional Japanese organization. We have a very rich heritage. And within that, there are traits within our culture that I think, you know, reflect the origins of the organization. We are collaborative. We are respectful. We do tend to come together, at least historically, in a traditional office environment in terms of our performance, in terms of how we work together and how we're visible as a workforce. So, of course, that went out of the window immediately that we switched to remote working. So there's been a fundamental shift in the organisation in that respect. I think one thing that's been helpful for us, and maybe other organisations don't have this benefit, but we're actually getting ready to move into a new EMEA headquarters in Liverpool Street next year. That's been delayed a year by COVID-19. But we've already been thinking quite hard about what's within our culture that we want to both maintain and enhance in that new office. So this ability to really think about the new office in the context of remote working, moving into a hybrid working model, repurposing the office, you know, really understanding what that office is for in terms of people coming together, collaborating, innovating and building those relationships and those social interactions that are so important to running our business. You know, I actually think that's been really helpful for us. There's lots of tactical things we did, of course, in terms of switching up technology, you know, more online, more digital collaboration tools, that intensity of communications that I also talked about in an earlier response. But also understanding that culture exists at lots of different levels. You know, we talk about organizational culture being a single homogenous thing. Of course, in reality, it is no such thing. We have lots of different microcultures depending on whether you're in the front office or you work in a control and support function, which part of the business you're in geographically, what is your departmental structure and leadership style look like. So again, we've really tried to bring it down to that departmental level, encourage managers to really have open and listening conversations with their people, get to know them, understand their particular circumstances, and just really kind of what I would call plan that spontaneity in terms of making sure that teams and functions are coming together, you're still having those social interactions and still really understanding each other in terms of workload, in terms of priorities and what needs to get done pretty much on a daily basis. So I think we've learned lots. Some of that will inform how we approach hybrid working in the interim, and a lot of it will inform how we really repurpose the office when we move into our new building in a year's time.
Helen, with Graham and SMBC obviously putting such a huge emphasis on culture and purpose, firms such as Microsoft obviously have a very important role in at least empowering firms to be able to put that stuff into practice in a remote work environment. Look, how easy do you think it was for your customers and the firms you deal with to embrace that journey? And look, do you think it started a wider cultural shift across the sector?
Well, I think if I just kind of touch on Microsoft's own cultural transformation that we've been on, you know, that actively changing culture is hard work. We've been on that now for 6 years. And to connect to Graham's point about purpose, we consider that we're still on the journey and actually not in search of a destination. And I think when we set out to change our own culture, we had a lot we wanted to retain from our 40-year history, but we also had a lot we wanted to leave behind to help us to prepare for the future. And in terms of that purpose, after a 9-month process at the beginning of the journey, we ground our culture in growth mindset. So focusing on being customer obsessed, diverse and inclusive, and an approach we named One Microsoft. And at the core of it, we actually wanted to move from being a bunch of know-it-alls to a bunch of learn-it-alls. And once we had that goal in place, we made a really bold statement very publicly and asserted our aspire to culture was the key to our future business success. So I think there's a lot that we have been doing around culture that I get asked a huge amount to talk to our customers about in terms of culture and technology and how one underpins the other. But recognizing that many of our customers were already on the cultural journey as we went into the pandemic. And quite early on, I did some FSI roundtables, actually, and there was three themes that came out. The first one was around the security perimeter moving. So, you know, comes back to this real estate footprint, no longer the four walls of our building. You know, it's our bedrooms, it's our kitchen tables, if we're lucky to have a home office. It's definitely opening up employment more widely because of that. So for FS versus that London centric piece, there was this second theme around rapid decision making, and some of that stuff that had been getting in the way was now no longer so much of an issue. But the last piece, and I loved Graham's example of the comms and bringing the culture into the spotlight. So already having that great culture, but how do you kind of like really put that spotlight on it? And what came out was a theme called humanizing management. And that has been consistent for the last year as customers have been going on this cultural journey through this pandemic, that this notion of humanizing management. And then at the same time, we have seen some of our FSI customers less sold on this permanency of having remote working due to that embedded culture that they've also grown up with, like we have in Microsoft.
Can I just touch on that? Because there is a lot of discussion going on around the sector right now as to, you know, some firms are really embracing this idea of the hybrid working model, whereas others are absolutely adamant that it is an aberration. I think there's some well-known quotes out there by some quite powerful CEOs to that effect. Who do you think history will bear out as being correct in this case?
Hybrid working.
Yeah, Graham, yourself?
Hybrid working, for sure. I think we've come so far, we've learnt so much, and a lot of that, frankly, a lot of that learning, as Helen's alluded to, comes from our people and their experience and what they want for the future. We have to balance that, of course, with, you know, all of the good regulatory and compliance things that we've talked about earlier, but hybrid working is definitely here to stay. I just wanted to pick up on Helen's point about culture, if I can, Rogan.
Of course.
You know, Helen makes a really good point. You know, as much as I think that we at SMBC have a strong culture and we have used that as a pillar, you know, to kind of rebuild and to start the recovery process, that's not to say that we don't believe that our culture needs to, you know, continue to evolve and to flex. You know, I think there are some things within our culture that, you know, have come from, you know, a 200-year history of the organization globally, starting in Japan. But there are clearly some things that we do need to flex and change in the future. So I think measuring your culture, engaging with your people, understanding what, you know, people want to preserve and nurture versus what we want to change, you know, that's very inherent in the culture work that we're doing now. So I think, you know, Helen's point about, you know, that cultural journey, I think, is absolutely critical. There are elements to our culture that we will want to change and evolve, but they won't fundamentally move away from some of those pillars that I talked about earlier.
Okay, great insights both. Look, we'll take a short break, and when we return, we'll focus on what we think the recovery will look like going forward and what challenges we may face as a sector and as individuals and how we might address those.
Hello, I'm Nick West, and I'm UK Finance's Head of Learning Innovation and Delivery. I wanted to take a moment to tell you about our Conduct and Culture Academy. Conduct and culture is a huge focus for the regulators, as they challenge firms to think about how they've dealt with and recover from a COVID environment, manage the here to stay of remote working, and prepare for the arrival of culture assessments in 2022. For those whose firms have begun to think about these challenges or who need to make that start, the UK Finance Conduct and Culture Academy is an intensive 4-day strategic programme focusing on practical skills, frameworks, and organisational behaviours to put customers and ethical values at the heart of decision-making. Join our industry SMEs, Dr. Roger Miles and Patrick Butler, along with peers from across the industry, as we discuss and debate the real issues firms need to focus on. All the information you need to learn more about the programme and join us can be found on our website at ukfinance.org.uk/conduct and culture.
Well, welcome back. Now, despite the positive news of late around vaccines and the government's plan to return to normality, many would say we are, and will be for some time, a long way from normal working life. Firms have been telling UK Finance that with so much uncertainty over the next 6 months, they will only be looking to transition staff back into the office very slowly. There won't be a big bang moment. Even then, it's likely that large numbers of staff will be spending at least part of their time working from home, which creates its own challenges. Helen, from your perspective, what do you feel are the most important things for firms to consider as they look ahead, both culturally and from a technology perspective, as they assess when and how to go back into the office?
So I do think there's been a lot of talk about hybrid work, but for most of us in the UK, the reality has been that either we're working remotely or a continuation of work on the physical premises in the last year. At Microsoft, I think we believe that hybrid work, and I said this earlier, is the future. Yes, we're a technology company, but think about combining the best of the digital workplace and the physical workplace. So the flexibility and autonomy to remote work, plus the kind of crucial human contact that I think we're really missing, and the strength of culture that a workplace enables us to have, that physical culture. So I think with the successful UK vaccine program, organisation leaders now really need to have this opportunity to build this true hybrid workplace for the future.
Okay. Graham, your views?
Yeah, very much agree with Helen, I think, Rogan. I think what we've learned, if I would, you know, just to sum it up over the last 12 months, is that, you know, work is something that we do and it's not somewhere that we go. And I think that's a really kind of interesting way to frame it. You know, we are definitely going to adopt hybrid working. We're in the process of, discussing what that looks like in reality. And as I said, part of that is engaging with our people around, you know, now that you've experienced something different, now we've proven that we can continue to work and be productive and do those good things for our customers that I've already talked about. You know, what do you want the future to look like? What choices do you want? What makes your life better in terms of your, you know, what I call the emotional contract that our employees have with SMBC as opposed to just the legal one? So I think hybrid working is going to be right for us. But I do want to caveat with that we are, as I said before, you know, we do have to think about regulation. We do have to think about supervision. We do have to think about compliance because that's the sector we're in. And that's an absolute non-negotiable in terms of getting that wrong for lots of obvious reasons. So we will have to find a balance between those two things. The vast majority of our people, based on what they've told us, do want to come back into the office for some proportion of their week. And that typically for most people is somewhere between 2 and 3 days. But then to have the other 2 or 3 days, you know, if they're full time, to work remotely, to work from home, you know, from wherever they happen to be. You know, that I think is creating choice. I think it makes us more attractive as a talent proposition for the future. And I think it's something that shows that we do, you know, have that trust and we will provide that autonomy to our people going forward. But it's going to have to be, you know, a conversation between individual employee and line manager in particular to work out, you know, what is right for, you know, for that particular relationship. I think the other thing I would say to that, Rogan, is we really have to think about, you know, what we're doing every day and what is the best environment for us as individuals or indeed as a team to create the best outcomes and to be the most productive. So we're much more focused now on what's in front of us for the day or the week ahead, you know, as we start to return to the office. So if we are, for the majority of our day, you know, mostly in meetings, if we are following process, if we are, you know, working, you know, on a cash flow model for a client or a contractual agreement or whatever it might be, then by all means, if you feel you're more productive to do that in a quiet environment at home and you've got the right infrastructure and setup, then why would you come into work? But equally, if, you know, the team believes and if you believe that you're better off that day because you're thinking about a new project, you're installing new technology, you're trying to structure a deal for a client, whatever it might be, if that work is done better face to face and, you know, across a project table from your colleagues, then, you know, feel free to come into the office and use that space. So it's all about reimagining and repurposing what the office is there for. It's not to do every aspect of work. It's to innovate. It's to collaborate. It's to build those social relationships. And it's to do something different other than the transactional tasks that are sitting in front of us. Someone described it to me recently as, you know, making that commute a worthwhile journey. What makes it attractive for people to come into the office and to have a better experience by doing that than working from home or working remotely on that particular day.
Look, I wonder if you could delve into that a bit further and perhaps give some practical examples about how you are ensuring that the office still remains relevant in a post-COVID environment.
Yeah, thanks, Rogan. Again, I think this is a really important question for us at SMBC. And I think what we've realized through the last 12 months is that work is actually something that we do. And not somewhere we go. So I think with that premise in mind, you know, we realize now that we can work differently and successfully. Our business has continued to grow in support of our customers over the last 12 months or so. And I suppose we're on what I would call our journey from, you know, being more transactional to being more innovative. So, you know, how do we repurpose that office to really provide a space where our people can come together, create those social connections, build those social relationships, and really innovate and collaborate in a way that's important for customers, for regulators, and indeed for our people themselves. The office certainly isn't dead for SMBC. We're really excited about our new building, having had the experience that we've had over the last 12 months. But we are thinking very deeply about how we make it fit for purpose for our people, for our customers, and for all of our stakeholders that are connected to our business.
Helen, from Microsoft's perspective, are there similar conversations going on with respect to the use of the workplace, or is a firm that already has a fairly ingrained hybrid working model, is there not much to change?
Okay, so similar to Graham, we were, just as we hit the pandemic, we were just about to start refurbing our head office campus in Reading. We recognised that when we opened our London Paddington office a few years ago, that was really over capacity with terms of number of people because of the location and the ease of use for it. So we were already rethinking the Reading space. So that That was put on hold, but it's been obviously brought back now. And I have had the chance to get into the office for one day last year in September, and it was really looking good. So we're thinking much more about it moving from being a workplace to a culture space. And so thinking much more about, you know, how do we collaborate, a space for creativity and a space for learning, as opposed to sort of having rows of hot desks where you come in every day. I'm excited to see what the new office is going to look like.
That's fantastic. All right, guys, look, we're almost at the end of our session today, and there's been some absolutely brilliant insights. So I thought we'd finish off with perhaps a bit of a short 30-word answer or 5-word answer with respect, well, where our listeners can perhaps benefit from your insight. And, you know, for our listeners who might be experiencing the same considerations or the same challenges about reimagining their workplace, what do you think are the key tips or must-have for firms who are starting this particular journey, or maybe are just very unclear on where to start? Graham, let's start with yourself.
Thanks, Rogan. I would say that, you know, be very clear about what you want that office space to be in the future. I love Helen's articulation of creating a culture space rather than a workspace. So really think hard and carefully about, you know, what is the purpose for that piece of real estate and how do you get the best out of it and how do you get the best out of people? I think there is a lot to think about in terms of the employee relationship with the company. I think we have become more human in some ways, although we're disconnected from each other. I think we've all had these incredible insights to each other's lives because of how we communicate and how we interact on video screens and so on. And there are some challenges here. We have to think about well-being. We have to think about mental health. We have to think about fairness and equality. We have to think about inclusion. We have to think about supervision. We have to think about how we bring new talent into the organization. And, you know, it's difficult to learn in the same way that we learned before by osmosis and just being around people that understand how things are done. These are all very, very different challenges. And there are some very considerable challenges within that. So I think really thinking those elements through, but really this kind of human-centric leadership that I think has started to emerge through the pandemic, I think is absolutely critical. And really think about, you know, technology, I think in the past has been a hygiene factor for many organizations. But I think now it's the enabler and it's a way that we can collaborate and adopt some of these new working practices, which I think have benefits for multiple stakeholders in the future. So an exciting time, but we have to be cautious around some of those other things that I've mentioned.
Exciting indeed. And Helen, look, what are your top tips?
Well, actually, I'm going to steal them from Harvard Business Review. There's an article in this month's magazine all about designing the hybrid office. And it states that tomorrow's office will serve primarily as a place to renew social ties, to build a learning culture and offer opportunities for serendipity. It says that they're going to be designed to foster human connections with the help of technology. And in this new world that enabled us to work from home at scale, it's all the more important to bring people back together in the office to deliver on the human needs. Quote, unquote.
There you go. I don't think I've ever heard us use the word serendipity on this podcast before. So, look, this brings us to the end of our podcast today. Let me thank you both very much, so Graham and Helen, for joining us today and providing us with your insights onto the workplace of the future and also the lessons you've both learned. We look forward to engaging with you and other members going forward from this. For our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed today's session. Please do provide us feedback on what you'd like to see more of, perhaps what's worked, what hasn't worked so well, and we'll definitely look to incorporate that into future podcasts. And if there's any specific issues you'd like us to focus on as we go forward, we'd love to hear from that as well. Helen, Graham, thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
A pleasure. Thank you, Rogan. Thanks, Helen.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the UK Finance Future of Finance podcast. For more information, please visit ukfinance.org.uk/podcasts.